crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Roll up, roll up. Read all about it. Welcome to the latest edition of House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our very good friends at Guinness. Hask is having his 40th birthday this weekend, so isn't here in his replacement. We have rugby sense aplenty in the shape of the man in the mirror, Mr. Alex Spink. How are you?
Daily Mirror Rugby Union correspondent. Professional with how you link that across.
Do you like that? I made that up in the loo about 15 seconds ago.
Whilst looking in the mirror, I'm good.
I mean, 10 seconds into the show,
and you know what we're about.
Well,
you know what we're about.
Surprised because I thought Haskell was born April the 1st.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So 24 hours.
Just a joke,
just because he is a joke.
You have quite a good relationship with Hask. I mean, I've watched the two of you go at each other on Twitter in the past. I would play you the voice message she sent through, but we'll do that at the end. I think it's early memories of a young James Haskell.
Just wanted to be Lawrence Delalio.
He did, didn't he? Still does
from the start. Still does, I think.
Yeah. But love it. One of those players that gives a huge amount of value to him.
In all seriousness, he is great value because he is larger than life.
Yeah.
He calls me the Negatron for reasons which I still haven't properly understood.
There's quite a few of you, though, in the journalistic market that could
take it as a compliment.
I take it as a compliment. Yeah. And I'm sure Tins is going to make a few points in the next couple of minutes on his thoughts on the subject. But, I mean, generally, I feel that if you're knocking around the England team in particular for 25 years and still doing it, I like to think you've got certain relationships and you've got certain standards, because if you don't, you get slightly chewed up and spat out. So
we're going to talk a lot about that. It's interesting you mentioned Tins is going to have a few points. You've had quite a few pints as well. What sort of state are we in?
No, we're good.
You're good.
We're good.
We've got very smart new mugs to drink from. Yours is filled with water at the moment. Would you like to explain to our audio listeners, welcome along on the podcast, why we are sipping from a Minchinhampton Rugby Club green mug?
We are sipping from the Minchinhampton Rugby Club.
Rugby Club. £9
Because the Minchinhampton Colts have got to the final. They're playing on. They're playing as Clifton this Friday. Most of the squad has been there since under sevens. We've got a great programme down there, and I felt it was my duty to give them a shout out. Coach is Ken Dickerson, done a great job. Chris Kite, who used to sponsor me at Gloucester Rugby as well.
He
used to be my shirt sponsor, Burley Travel.
Tick.
Ding. They are playing fantastic rugby. They shouldn't have won. They weren't expected to win the semi-finals, and they've won it. So if you're at a loose end on Friday night and you're in Bristol, go down to Lockleys Sports Centre and watch the final.
You're a sponsor's dream. If we're doing shout-outs, my nephews, Jack and Tom Cooper, used to play for Minchinhampton Minis as well.
I just don't like that phrase, used to.
Well, they may come back, but at the moment they're playing schools.
They didn't follow the money to the arrival.
They didn't follow Minis. The money. No, right. They are still playing their rugby, but they are doing it.
Are we prepared to go into a wider debate between schools and clubs?
Well, possibly, but not on this show.
Okay. It's a bit of a bugbear.
Is it?
I think. Well,
how can you do both?
Well, no, I just think it puts young kids in a very difficult position, the way they have to choose between schools and
clubs. But their club will always be their club. They can play for their school and go back and play
for
their club at the weekends.
Sometimes they can't play in county matches because they have to play for their schools.
Okay.
Is that the right way around of doing it? I don't know.
What should they do?
That's the question. I don't know what the answer is, because I never played for a club because I felt I was fulfilled at school.
Right.
I was at a good rugby school.
Wakefield. Good knowledge.
That were a successful rugby team, so I didn't feel that I had to go play for a Sandal or whoever else. But there are. I also don't think that kids should play twice a week, which if you play at school on a Saturday, you might play on a Sunday at your local club, which I don't think you should do.
Okay.
Because you wouldn't ask a professional rugby player to do that, so why should you put a kid through it? But there's got to be a way of balancing out how you get that relationship, because I know that people have fallen out with schools have been really aggressive to clubs and vice versa, depending on the importance of match, and I don't think it's right to put kids in the middle of that.
Great topic for another show.
Okay.
Where we can expand and explore.
Yeah. And get two people who are from schools and
the pros and cons. Happy birthday to James Haskell. 43 years old today. On this week's show, we're going to reflect on European club rugby. I mean, this is apparently what we're going to try and get to, but we'll see where we end up. We're going to look at Owen Farrell in greater detail. Congratulations to Owen and Mrs. Farrell as well on the arrival of their newborn.
Whose name is Tommy.
Is that right? Congratulations. Have you sent a card? little bunch of flowers.
I passed my best through George Ford today.
Well done you.
Yeah.
And we've got a perfect pour on the subject of footballers. You are a massive QPR fan.
Yes.
Oh, good times.
Yes, mm-hmm. Good times indeed.
I am a Shepherd's Bush resident. I took my son to his first QPR game on Saturday. Yeah, 2-1 home loss to Bolton Wanderers.
With exquisite
absolutely
timing.
Absolutely loved it.
In a scarf. To a club that's about to fall apart, yeah. It's good days.
Support your local team and ride the highs and the lows.
I'll never judge you on that, but yeah. It's not good when you lose to Bolton in terms of what they're going through.
And Rotherham 3 weeks previously.
No, not good. That is also for another show.
Yeah.
What I would love... congratulations, you're first journalist on this show.
Well, it's lovely to be on.
Either you haven't seen it before and therefore you're not quite sure what you're stepping into, or you bring a little bit of class to proceedings. I'd love a sort of clap of thunder as we announce you from the dark side. There's so many things I'd love to talk to you about how the game has changed in the time that you've been involved. But way back when, just tell us how you got into it and how you got started and what the job consisted of back in day.
Well, to start with, I was at college in Roehampton. I got a job on the Richmond Twickenham Times with the idea of covering Brentford, but very quickly rugby kind of took over because that's obviously the main sport in the area.
Yeah.
From there, went on to the national agencies and then ended up in Fleet Street.
Yeah.
Covering rugby, and it's been a great ride. You know, I've known Tins from early days. I mean, I remember watching Jason Leonard playing for the Eastern Counties Colts, I think. I mean, it kind of dates us, but you know, we've been here a long time. You talk about how rugby's changed.
You look great for 82. Bro.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well,
so much. I put a little bit of grey in the hair tonight, just to make you all feel better.
At least you still got it to put it in.
It was funny when I walked in; there was salt and pepper in your hair. I thought that was quite amazing.
But I mean, when we started, we had, you know, I would pick up a phone and call you. I mean, you would tell me whether you wanted to talk or not. But I mean, the fact of the matter was, we had an England World Cup winning team. I had a contact book and all the numbers were there. I mean, now you don't get within a mile of anything.
So
which is a great shame.
But whose fault is that? I know Clive had a role with it in terms of... But when did... Because as you said, we used to have great relationships with the media. We used to, like, if you imagine going on tours, a lot of the time you boys would be out with us. It was very much of that... one in all in elk. And then it changed, and I can't remember. It changed when Robbo was coach, in my eyes. The media,
Andy Robinson,
the media,
he had a really tough run, and was that the
media
trigger?
The media changed aggressively towards how it was the first time I've seen a rugby coach told that they should leave their job in a live interview. I think Graham Simmons did it to him.
He would have phrased it as a question.
Yes,
but I remember the interview very well.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
Simo
it was very un rugby where we've normally been really good mates.
Mm. Yeah,
very. Look, what do you want me to talk about? Let's promote this. Let's do that.
Yeah,
I know Clive had a little bit of a shutdown in terms of how he treated the media because he didn't want to give anything away, and I don't think that necessarily was right. But
yeah.
I think at that point the players, all the guys still had a great relationship with the players.
Yeah.
But then it grew to the fact that, I'm not going to say sensationalization. I'm never going to get there tonight. Sensationalization of stories and stuff like that and extremist reporting. It sort of became the next thing of sports media.
Yeah.
And I think that then put the players way off just answering a phone call to you.
Would you go along with that? Did you feel a rupture, or was it just gentle?
Up to a point. I mean, I think Will Carling would say it happened some time before then, from his point of view, as the most kind of high profile. And, you know, he had various friendships and links out of side rugby, and there was a lot of scrutiny was brought to bear on that. So I think Carling would say he was the first, if you like, victim of that sort of reporting. I like to think let's be honest, the World Cup, when England won the World Cup, it was a game changer for a sport which had been an amateur sport watched by amateur rugby people. It suddenly became
front page news,
and it became something that everyone was involved in. And then it became a sport which wasn't only reported in the back of the book, it was reported in the front, because all of a sudden we knew who was playing.
Yeah.
You know, in Tins's team, obviously, even now, if you ask somebody, a man in the street, to name a dozen England rugby players, I would bet you a tenner, 8 of them played in the World Cup team of 2003. Possibly more.
Yes. That was the sort of the funny thing is, I reckon also you'd find more people naming Carling, Guscott, Underwood, Teague, possibly than some of the current crop. I wonder if
Ackford and Dooley will always try Ackford and sort Dooley. Of make it.
But Leonard,
well, Ackford will mention himself.
Of course, yeah.
But I wonder if that is because the characters in the game have withdrawn. You know, the modern players, Hask apart, are not as comfortable, whether that's a team environment thing or whether it's social media or whether it's they get burned in the press. They're not as comfortable putting themselves out there anymore because of the perception that goes with being in the public eye.
And the message that they're delivered from clubs and
exactly.
country.
Yeah. But things. I think the game's poorer for it.
I think Fleet Street is no longer the front line. Social media is the front line. I don't think if you talk to a player hand on heart, he's worried about sitting down with me or any of my colleagues who cover the sport all the time. They're worried about going out into a bar where all the camera phones are. They're not worried about us because, you know, I say, I've known Mike for 25 years. If he doesn't like me, he'll phone me up and tell me.
Yeah.
It's the anonymous cameras. It's the stories that come out. You know, some of the things which have happened on various tours have come out because they've been sold by people in the bar or people with camera phones.
Yeah.
Largely speaking, without kind of, you know, walking away from our responsibilities as journalists, largely speaking, the stuff has come from the outside. And I think as a result of that, we're now in a situation where the young players, most of whom have come through academies, haven't lived an awful lot of life in truth. They've got agents telling them they're wonderful. They haven't achieved an awful lot.
I agree with that. And
all of a sudden, they're being told not to talk to us or to go through your agent. And I'm slightly despairing of it. I know I cross the amateur into professional, as we all do, but I think that isn't the sport that we came into.
Do you ever feel that you've written things... I think actually headline writers ruin your job worse than actually, you know,
because the headline is worse than the content.
Because obviously you write an article and then the headline writer will write a headline to it. And I saw the thing about Kano.
Yes.
Is it Kano?
Yeah, Jerome Kano, about Julian Surveyor.
About Julian Surveyor. And if you actually read the article, he is, I want to be here to support Julian and his family.
Yeah.
And they've written a horrendous headline.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is bad for reporters, because then obviously you then link the two together and it's like, well, I don't want everyone to speak to him again, or I don't want to speak to the magazine, newspaper, whatever it might be. Mm. But then there is, and I'm not saying that there are people who flick-flack between opinions, and I think if you talk to Hask about it, it's about balance.
Yeah.
And it's a very hard thing to do because you're probably paid for an opinion, you have to give an opinion. Mm. But at the same time, what any player who reads the media just wants balance.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you've had a bad game.
So it's a really interesting point you make here. Have the parameters of your... Because I want to find out about Fleet Street when you went in. Yeah. How old were you when you first went to Fleet Street?
23.
And 24. Give us a sense of what that was like and what the job entailed and how you went about your work and what was expected of you. Because that will lead into where you are today and how that's changed. But was it smoky pubs and 50p in the phone box?
It was the tail end of that.
Right.
So my first job, which was the Haters Agency, which was based in Fleet Street, which was next to the Telegraph, next to the Express, just before they all moved out to Canary Wharfs and away. And you type a story, you'd have carbon paper.
God, we are going back, aren't we?
President's men?
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd write the story, put it in this, it then be subbed by somebody who underscore things and would, you know, sub it and protect you if you make a mistake and enhance you if it wasn't as good as it might be. And then it changed. The internet came in, what was it, 91, 92.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we were having to file later and later, more and more, because we could get it through quicker. And the whole business completely changed.
How did you go about gathering your news stories, and what were the parameters under which you were expected to work 23 to 25? I mean, was it, we want features, we want to understand people? Was it, we want... I mean, clickbait, in inverted commas, is a new phenomenon, which is getting people into
that's
websites.
A completely new phenomenon.
Of course it is. But what were the parameters then back in the day as to what you were expected to deliver as a young, up-and-coming sports journalist?
Well, news.
Yep.
But news being rugby news, you know.
Yeah.
Either... It can be something as prosaic as injuries, or it can be somebody talking about moving, or there's a row with the RFU, as there so often was in those early days.
Yeah.
It was the kind of basic stuff. Now, I started with the kind of doing stuff for the Telegraph,
yeah,
only came onto the kind of red tops and the tabloid end later on. But I like to think through it all, the fundamentals, you still have to have your principles.
Yes.
Going back to the longevity of it, you know, if you don't, you get found out and people don't talk to you and whatever. So you have to have that.
Was the tone gentler back then? Was an editor happier to say, I want good news as well as bad news, if you know what I mean?
No, well,
because now it's either all in or all out. Do you know what I mean? The middle ground is...
I'm not sure that's completely true. I don't think that's completely true in papers.
Right.
I think online it's true because the online beast is clickbait. It's okay. Different. It's completely different. You're judged on an online piece by the amount of hits, the amount of clicks you get, whereas you can craft a column. And some of our best writers in Fleet Street can spend all day writing beautiful pieces. They'll put the link online and it won't get a... It won't get a like, it won't get a retweet, it won't get anything. But if you talk about some...
Top 10 worst English performances.
Or some Russian player's model girlfriend, there'll be 100,000. Yeah. So, you know, there's no kind of logic to it anymore. You've got to adapt with it, clearly. But, you know, you talk about 2004, I guess you're talking about, when things started to change. Well, England had just won the World Cup. Expectation was high. Andy came in to a job which... Clive had said you can't do without
in the media,
various things. And because of the expectation, I think he was judged more harshly. I do think
Did you generally think there was expectation with how many players we'd lost out of that World Cup, basically the spine of that World Cup squad? And what Clive had built was not on a model that New Zealand roll out now where they integrate, and some might say what Eddie does, chopping and change a lot. We didn't change for 4 years. So then you take Jono... Westy, Jace, who else do we take? Backy. Hilda carried
Backy
on.
Backy went
for
on the 05 Lions tour. He was there in 04, wasn't he? We took
a lot. I think it was seven sort of core starters we took out of that 2003.
No, if you've been critical, Tins, the England, Clive didn't prepare for beyond 2003.
No. And that wasn't his remit, he would always sit. You know, in the fact that he sat there in 99, whether he's right or wrong, and ultimately, possibly looking back now, I didn't think he was wrong at the time, because sometimes when I wasn't informed, he'd still pick me. Mm-hmm. But that gave you then confidence to play.
Can you remember an incident when you were massively out of form where he said, we're going to go with it anyway?
No, I went through a bad patch in 2001, had a few injuries, but then whenever I was fit, he'd pull me back in.
Yeah.
But there were times where I was like, I'm not generally quite on form, and then there might be someone else, whether it be Nooney or whether it be Hipkiss or whatever, Hipkiss obviously a little bit later, that you think, well, he could... He could take a punt with someone else. He just didn't. And then, but that was good for me, because then you have, in terms of motivation, I can't let him down, sort of thing. I don't think I really ever let him down in an England jersey. So it sort of paid itself back. But then you look at what New Zealand do now in terms of rotation, and if they take a Dan Carter out, that guy who came in had to fulfil his role, and he was under the full remit that he knew what he had to do. And we just didn't do that. And we got there, we won it, and we weren't prepared then for what came next. We hadn't blooded, we hadn't done anything else.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, did I know as a player that it would go the way they did? 2004, basically till, 2010 probably, that it would be as bad as it was. No, you don't really think, but then, you know, now you look at it and you don't have that. You have a constant group of players that you chop and change. You say sometimes, now I'm saying, Eddie, would you just stick to something? You're 12 games out from a World Cup, just please pick a team that you feel that's going to go forward. But you need that depth of player pool. We just didn't have
that. But Eddie now is, you know, he, part of his remit when he came in was not only to win the World Cup and make England the best team in the world. My goodness, did he say that a few times? It was also to prepare for the future. And as far as I can see, he's not preparing for the future at all, purely as England coach. He's got people around him and he's got a new structure now which does it better.
Yeah.
But in terms of what he's doing as opposed to what Clive did, probably pretty similar. They were both trying to win England the World Cup. They weren't really too bothered with what happened the following day.
Yeah. I want to pick up on Eddie, because obviously it leads into the Lions as well. You've done 5 tours, is that right?
Yeah, I think
is that
so.
Right?
Yeah, something like
I've done four actually. It'd be interesting to compare notes on that. But just to get back again to start with,
you've aged so much better.
I know. Oil of Ulay twice a day. I think you should try it. When you hark back to the early years, as it were, of your journalism career, who were the characters? What are the interviews that stand out now? Whether it's English domestic players or overseas tourists or the guys who you thought, Christ alive, this is rugby.
Well, I guess when I first started, I was hearing the stories about the Colin Smarts and those drinking aftershave and aftermatch functions and you know, kicking the Calcutta Cup down the street, you know, all those which have gone into folklore. And I think rugby kind of had dined out on those stories for some time on. And then after that, yes, there were the tales of drinking, but not the way that there were in the old days of the Lions, where they were throwing sofas and TVs.
Will there be many of them, officer? Willie John McBride.
Precisely. And running up flagpoles. That did get slightly left behind. The more the game became more professional, the fewer those sort of stories there were, which is why, when there are those stories, obviously they attract a lot of attention. Yeah.
Do you get frustrated that a random... just trying to think of an example. Say Danny Care walks into a bar, has an verbal argument with someone. Someone tries to start on him, and then
Cipriani in jersey ends up in handcuffs.
Does that annoy you when you have to report on that because it takes away from what the game is? Do you see it as newsworthy?
First instance, we don't report on it. So in the first instance, it's a news story. Our remit then is how that situation affects his rugby career. So in the case of Danny in jersey, clearly it was the timing was all wrong, but there's such an ongoing narrative with Danny in England, and I always feel lots of stuff that isn't said about why he's not picked. And as a result of that, that just fed into the narrative, he's trouble off the field. Actually, if you go through the cuttings, he got almost, I would say probably got 80% support from the rugby correspondent, rugby writers, pointing out that yes, that happened, but there were mitigating circumstances, and B, his form for Gloucester week in week out has been superb.
So, do you sometimes feel in conflict with the news element of journalism relative to sports?
But then, and how much do you have to react to, say, Sky Sports News or? Sorry, Jim White, but...
Breaking news.
Jim White, who rang me up about it, and I was like, look, ultimately, at this point, he didn't really get reprimanded that badly but for doing it. I'd spoke to a few of the players and had...
They were gobsmacked about it.
Had some insight into it and the fact that it was probably blown a lot out of proportion.
Yeah.
And then I get someone like Jim White talking about it, and I said, look, at the end of the day, I prefer to focus on what we can do on the field. And I say it shouldn't really affect that what he's doing. These things happen to people every single weekend. Yes, you can say he's a professional athlete and it shouldn't happen to him. And as a sign-off, he was like, I like him. I like having a bit of a lad who's got some banter, but I don't like someone who hits women. And that was his sign-off. And I was like...
Thanks, Mike. Goodbye.
Wow. Yeah. What? I was like... Wow. But that's... So then that is why then players listen to that and then they go, why would I want to speak to anyone?
Well, hang on. You can't everyone with that claim.
But it's the way, unfortunately, the way of the world, it does happen that way. And, as much as I don't mind Jim, I get on quite well with him about certain points, as long as you agree with his opinion. But it's not... That is where the world is now. You're always chasing the click... Media.
Are you chasing the click or not? I mean, what percentage of your job spec now is how much are you accountable to traffic as opposed to, do you know what I mean?
Journalist.
Which is journalism.
There's no question we have a dual role now. One, what appears in the paper, and clearly I'm at the red top end at the Daily Mirror, so, I like to think we don't sensationalise things, but we also don't take things too seriously at times. But we have to do things which is going to get people reading it because that's the whole mission statement of a red top. When you're online, it's a different game. So we will do a lot of videos, a lot of putting a few provocative comments out, but it's opinion. It's not. I would say that I would stand by pretty much everything that I've written. I'm sure Mike will pull out a couple of examples, and I can remember a couple of headlines I've seen on pieces when I've gone
that you've written.
Well, no, I never write headlines.
No, no, but you've written a piece and you've seen the headline that's attributed off.
I don't think a majority of the written rugby press really write a bad article. They just have really bad headline writers.
Why do you not write your own headlines? Was that a really stupid question?
Well, that's the way it will be soon.
So you will be accountable from top to bottom for the
which I'd be quite comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I think most people will be, but you know, back in the day, back in newspapers as they were, you had people who did different jobs. Yeah. And which is really good, because we all make mistakes and you want somebody picking up your mistakes.
Yes.
So the process helped in the construction of something and also safeguarding things. And incidentally, while we're talking about the media, it's worth remembering, and probably players never think of it this way, but the amount of times they say things which are either factually wrong or something they might regret or might not look good, which we actually protect them from by not using, is significant. And nobody ever
gives
that to
us. It's so interesting you say that, because I've never verbalised it before, but whenever I was a young reporter trying to make my way at Sky, and you'd go to interview someone and they'd shut the door, and it was really hard work. You sort of wanted to say, you know, it's Sky that put a huge amount of money in and give you a huge amount of profile that enable you to go out and do what it is that you do and earn a bucket load of money. And nothing to do with me in that regard, but if you can't equate the good times and the opportunities that come, because we give you airtime and we give you coverage and we fan the flames of legend, there's a huge disconnect.
Agreed. And there are the amount of players who, a bit of a generalisation, okay, but there's a number of players who won't give the media anything when they're playing. And yet, as soon as they stop, where do they want to go?
Poacher turned gamekeeper.
First through the
door. Who is the worst example of that in rugby?
Haskell.
Very, very fair point, actually. The one or two in cricket as well, aren't they? Hathers and Nasser being the two prime candidates.
Yeah.
Fair comment? you're whimsically stroking your chin.
I don't.
Is that not fair? You guys earn big bucks, but because broadcasters come in and pay big money to show the product. Journalists, print, digital, offer great coverage, and that affords you the lifestyle that goes with it.
I would not disagree with you sitting out of the game now and looking in. But then if I was a player, I would have disagreed with you, because you only focus on what you're doing day to day and what you read. And a lot of the time it can get misrepresented. And then the only way that you can react to being misrepresented is by not doing the same thing. So it's a difficult play. It's a difficult situation to be in. And the most of the reason why players then want to get into media is to not do the mistakes that they've, or not be the person that they've been. So you take Barnes.
It's not for the money.
Yeah.
From my point of view, I'd love to be more active in the media than I am, but I'm not, and it wouldn't be about money. It would be like Barnsley was as well as I get on with Stuart Barnes in terms of we love racing, quite happy to spend time with him. I was never his, what he saw as a centre.
No one will ever replace James Simpson Daniel in his affections. Well, many can try, but
that's beside the point, because James Simpson Daniel was possibly the best player I've ever played with.
Right.
So, and I'll say
he
that
could pick him.
I would say that in any situation that I was, but he would never give my credit, and I wasn't going to play one game because I'd broken my hand, and then he told me that I wasn't good enough to play anyway, so I played with a broken hand, and I played against Timmy Horan, scored 2 tries. He had to give me man the match, and I sort of went at him after the game about it.
In what capacity? Talk me through that.
So he
verbals up against the wall. What were you?
No. So he was interviewing me. I was in the thick, and I was like, the only reason I'm playing today is because Stuart Barnes. Because
you literally played a game of rugby with a broken hand because Stuart Barnes said,
whether it be on the rugby club back in the day, said that I wasn't good enough, and I shouldn't play for England, and I shouldn't do this. So
it's good to know you get in their heads, isn't it?
Oh, it was the night before. It was literally the night before a game. So did they do a rugby club Friday nights?
Thursday nights.
So it must have been Thursday night, and I travelled, and whether I'd watched it late or whatever, and I just went to the coach and said, yeah, I'm playing. And they got man the match.
I find that extraordinary.
And afterwards, I was like, well,
and you told, and you went to Barty. Yeah, well,
so he was doing like, he wasn't there interviewing me, but
he was up on the
speaking
gantry.
In or whatever. Yeah. I said, the only reason I'm playing is because of you, because you're wrong.
What did you say? Well done, son.
And he was like, well, I've got my opinion or whatever. You know what Barnsley's like.
So I'd love to have him on the show. That would be, we need a clap of thunder when we announce Barnsley on here. But there is such an interesting conversation to be had with him.
But so for Barnsley, like, I value his opinion and everything, but he flip-flops for me. So he...
But why is a man not allowed to change, or woman allowed to change their opinion?
Yeah, but no. You have a philosophical view.
I must
view.
Say, 9 points gives you great confidence in your vocabulary.
A philosophical view on how you should play rugby.
He's got a thought.
So how you want to play rugby, and Barnsley is, he wants to play two, you know, he wants to play wide, expansive rugby, he wants to see joué. But then if you go back to when England toured New Zealand, when was that? Where they played
2014,
where they lost two games, but they played amazing.
2014,
So they played amazing rugby, scored loads of tries, probably the best team for two games, but lost in it. And he said,
Mano on the wing. He
said, maybe England should go back to what they're good at, eight man rugby. I'm like, well, you can't just flip back. You should be praising
England.
He's
made that opinion based on the evidence of what he's seen. They've gone and played.
But you should.
But it's a sport.
Okay, you can say, no, of course it is. But you can say, okay, I liked the way they played. They just weren't good enough. Why do you go back to maybe they should play? Because that's not what his career was based upon. Otherwise, if it was, he might have played ahead of Rob Andrew a few more times.
Did you ever mention back?
Yeah, but
he's written a really good book, Barnes. Yeah, have you read his new book?
No,
it's very good.
But
actually,
that's what I'm saying. I don't mind sketches. This is what players want: is balanced opinion. You can't jump around. So
that's the nature of sport. You know, people.
Yes, but you can still have a narrative that you follow. Like someone might have a bad game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but he's not a bad player. No one who gets to play Premiership rugby or international rugby is a bad player.
Of course they're not.
There's no way.
But you're judging international players on the best of the best.
Yes.
But also...
But then you can go, okay, he's not in form. That's not a bad thing.
But there are players who have played international rugby who aren't necessarily of a quality to do that.
Yeah, and occasionally you will get... There's not many who get that right where... And they will always have to make that leap to international rugby. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say... If you look at Tatey, let's say...
Yeah. Matthew Tate.
Yes, Matthew Tate. Literally world beater at club rugby. Amazing player. Not necessarily made that step up to... I feel really bad, sorry, Tatey.
Played in the World Cup. Should have scored in the World Cup final.
Made the try that wasn't in the World Cup final. Yeah.
But never really got to where you would have expected him to get to on his
was
club.
Was that because he was picked at 18 and carried around by Gavin Henson?
And dropped the next week?
Yeah,
Did that damage him at international level?
You can look
level?
At handling, yes. But there, I think there are, and I feel bad saying that about Tatey because he obviously had the talent, and you don't. And unfortunately, he's had to retire through injury, which is sad because what he was, you know, that covering tackle that he made.
Leicester.
What game was that?
Yeah, it was Rugby
Rose.
Come on. Wasn't it?
Incredible. The things that he could bring. But then there are always those guys who just don't. You expect them to take it on their stride, and things just don't go their way. And
but some of it is timing. I mean, we talk about Andy Robinson coming in and getting a bad press. You know, he was the David Moyes to Sir Alex Ferguson, wasn't he? With Woodward, he came in. You know, everyone was saying, "Well, you're not going to be able to match Ferguson," and sure enough, Moyes didn't. The same happened with Robbo. He tried a number of things, one of which was picking Matthew Tate at 18.
But then we go back to the RFU and making good decisions.
Did you play in Tate's first game?
No, I watched.
You watched?
Yeah, I watched from... it was at home, wasn't it?
No, it was in Cardiff.
I remember watching from the stand in Cardiff. And going... Because I just got back fit. And I was like, well, I should be playing.
So if you put your hand in your heart, you would have said that was the wrong game for him to play and make his debut. In Cardiff, 18 years old.
That's hindsight, though. Because how many 18-year-olds have been chucked in and been star of the show?
Not many.
Jeff Wilson, Scotland, 1993.
Keith Jarrett.
Keith Jarrett. God, we're going back, aren't we? Norse. Yeah. You know, Manu. Manu was, what was he in 2011?
1920?
Took Ireland to the cleaners in Dublin.
So we went.
That was a World
George
Cup,
North.
World Cup warm-up.
Look,
Wales away in the Six Nations.
See, no, sure. But I think it depends also on where the team is as a whole.
Yeah, okay.
because
yeah, I agree.
Yes, that's
true. You look at when myself, Bolsch, Ben Cohen, Steve Thompson came into that team. We're all 21, 20 yeah. for Tomo, but we're in a balanced team. I think you go back to that game, we're still in a bit of flux. We haven't really got a core behind it. So I think there is time to putting an 18-year-old in there, 20-year-old. Yeah. You look at the footballer, Okin...
Hudson-Odoi?
Yeah, Okin. Almost.
Good.
That's how good my football knowledge is.
10 points down, yeah.
But no, that was just because I didn't know his name. I think he, you know, you look, there is still, if you get it into a balanced team that suits, it is it does work. But whether that was the right moment in the right time of where the squad was, then you might say no.
We started off with this talking about how it's portrayed in the media, didn't we? And, you know, just by having this conversation, you can see how the opinions are going from one extreme to the other. And, you know, the
you've
media...
put your name to
we,
it.
And we have to reflect the opinions as well. We have to reflect what people are talking about. We have to try to engage the people in the street with the subjects they are talking about to make it interesting. So, listen, on certain things which you've mentioned, probably guilty as charged. But on other things, we're stoking rivalries, and I think we'll all agree.
It's fine.
You know, I can remember... writing pieces in defence of you when Will Carling said you shouldn't be in England. I can remember writing that and Carling not speaking to me for X years. But, you know...
Fuck you, Will. I'll be ringing you later.
But these, you know, when you're in the heat of it, when you are the player reading it in the middle of your career, of course it's going to be. But I think when you step back on balance and if you were to review the press you got, the rugby press you got, most of it, you'd probably say that's
in some of the ways, I probably thrived on it. It was my mentality. Yeah, my mentality was to prove people wrong.
Yeah. Is the secret to it as a player just not really to mind very much?
It's hard to do, though.
Why?
It's hard now.
Well, if someone criticises you for your day job and...
Read the YouTube comments. You get ripped from pillar to post.
Never read below the line.
Very good. That's from never
who's trying to get everyone to read below the line.
Very quickly, because we've got to interlude, I want to pick up on this. You're listening to the House of Rugby, together with Guinness, brought to you by Joe and me, Alex Penn, alongside Mike Tindall and Alex Spink, rugby correspondent of the Daily Mirror. Still to come, we're going to talk about the European quarterfinals. I'm just trying to keep up with you. And we're going to be tackling a footballer's perfect paw. First, though, here's something else you might like from Joe.
Thanks, Alex. I'm Russell Cain. This is Boys Don't Cry, the show where we perv in on men's secret thoughts and men and women get to hear exactly what we really think. Every week, I have a panel of two men and one lady auditor, just in case we stray into stereotypes which she can dispel with inside knowledge. So make sure you subscribe to Boys Don't Cry wherever you get your podcasts. I find mine in the garden.
Thank you very much indeed, Russell. I've been told to do the Facebook thing by producer side. Don't forget to join the House of Rugby. Are you on Facebook? Is that part of the job?
Twitter.
You're on Twitter? Yeah. Good. What are you on Twitter?
Alex Spink Mirror.
Alex Spink Mirror. Follow Alex Spink Mirror and join our House of Rugby Facebook group. Lots of great content and conversations going on there, as we have here as well. Just before we get into European quarterfinals, quick fire questions. You up for that?
Yeah.
First interview was with...
First interview ever?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey.
Who did you take your brand new notebook and sharpened pencil
who
to speak to
that cherry
back in the day?
I can remember interviewing, I think his name was Nick Phipps, who was
a local Barnes resident
who was British bobsleigh champion.
Wowzers. How many words were you asked to write on that?
Local paper. 17. I was a sports editor, so plenty.
Big lad. Double page feature. Big lad, sprinter. Yes. 17 stone, heavy, get you down the hill.
Did you ever interview Tins?
A few times. Yeah.
Have you ever written an article?
Who is the best guy to interview?
The best.
Who gave you the most?
Always very honest.
Yeah.
Never held anything back. Listen, if I'm ever going to pick anyone in the from the playing fraternity, I will always say Lawrence Delalia, because Lawrence had the most scrutiny put on his career, arguably.
Front page and back.
Dan, yeah. Front page and back. And yet he was as good through it all. He got stripped of the England captaincy and he was always fantastic for us.
Did he mind? Because we were talking about just a few moments ago about whether players mind too much. Did he mind or did he just sort of wear it and get on with it?
I think he understood the nature of the business. Beast. Now, I'm sure there are certain news items which he didn't particularly care for, but across the piece, I think he understood, and I think he continues to understand. I haven't really seen anyone quite like Lawrence's on and off the pitch for being able to deliver, take the slings and arrows, and just kind of keep coming back for more. And I think probably across the piece, he'd now look at it and say, the coverage was pretty fair. Pretty fair. I had my bad times. I had my good times. Do it all again. And that, you know, that's turned him into a legend.
And he
continues to do fantastic things with the foundation.
I think it's also made him balanced in terms of what he does on
He's very good. Very good.
You know, he's never going to fly off at the deep end, is he, about something, because he's probably been and done it.
Everyone loves a comeback as well. Look at Rocky. Everyone loves a comeback. Yeah. Best game you ever seen. Which one game would you go back and scribble on again if you could?
That's a lot of games.
Well, there's a few. I mean, the ones that came to my mind when I was thinking about this, New Zealand-France, 99 semi-final. New Zealand 24, 10 up. France come back and score, well, I don't know, 41 points or 31 points to win it.
Dominici.
Extraordinary stuff. Wasmunster Heineken Cup semi-final 2004.
Oh, I was there for that. That was mega.
One of the most incredible games, wasn't it?
That was absolutely sensational.
Particularly because that was in the same season, Rugby North Alert, that Wasps lost to Potent Bees in the Power Gen
Cup. We were talking about that the other day.
There you go.
That's a story that was never written, isn't it?
I was there.
Were you?
I was at the game. It was written.
Best player?
Best player? I think Dan Carter would come close. I think what he did in Wellington 2005, second Lions test, for a single game performance, I don't think I've ever seen anything to match that.
Extraordinary.
Robbo up there? Robbo's got to be close.
Yes. Dancing feet. You're talking about Jason Robinson.
Yeah.
Not Andy or Sean. No. Jason, yeah. Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, he was one of those edge of the seat players in the most literal sense, wasn't it? Every time he got the ball. And I guess playing with him, almost an edge of the seat player.
Murray's making an appearance. Alex, you haven't met Murray before, but Murray is arguably the most valuable man in our production team.
Very good to see you.
And Tins hollers, Tins gets.
Mills Mullaina. Never really, until I played with him.
Thank you.
For the Barbars. And it's like he's got force field around him.
Really?
Yeah. Incredible.
Interesting.
In terms of...
just people just falling off him, falling at his feet, seeing things way ahead. Rennie Ranger was... pretty special. Christ. I mean, what happened to Rennie Ranger?
He went to Montpellier. Then he went back.
He ended up playing NPC or whatever it was back in, and just happy with that. He was one hell of a player too.
Here's one for you: player who never quite made it to their full potential because of injury, or Tom Rees.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a very
Zach
good shout.
Zach Guildford. Well, he won a World Cup, Zach.
Very,
Guildford, didn't he?
Very good shout, both of
Sinbad.
Sinbad for sure. I mean, I can remember his fantastic England debut, and then I think he picked up a virus and was forced out of his second game.
Pneumonia.
I mean, that was cool.
So he got pneumonia that time. He then he played against Samoa, and got a horrendous.
Do you remember burning Lomu in the Barbados game?
The old throw it in the air, catch it, gone. So that's what Sinbad was amazing at in terms of what he could see and then what he could deliver. Like, you know, you'd just be running around not expecting your support line and the ball would just appear at your hands. You look at the Toulouse try where the guy takes it and just
throws. I just put it in space.
Like, he's seen the guy looping around the back of him and where he expects him to be, and that's what Sinbad could do too.
Yeah, and I think I would put Danny Cipriani into that into that bracket, frankly, because I think in a pure footballing sense, going forward, you know, I think he's a genius, but you know, we are never going to see the best of him. He's got a handful of caps.
You said earlier there are a lot of unwritten reasons why he's not picked for England, but people don't write them. Can you expand on that?
Well, I think the amount of times he's been in and around England coaching squads, we've had 20 years of everyone saying what a gifted player he is, and yet not a single England coach has got on with him, as far as I can work out from my standpoint. So there are man management issues, whether or not it's him misbehaving or just people not liking the cut of his jib, not liking the way that he gets on. A good example, and Stuart Barnes has quoted it a couple of times this year, was in South Africa in the summer. The sense has always been with Eddie Jones that Jones doesn't particularly want him involved. He much prefers Owen Farrell and George Ford. Mm-hmm. Safe pair of hands, best mates, very clean cut, all about the team. Danny is not all about the team. He's far more about the team now. Since he's gone to Gloucester, I would say he is all about Gloucester. I think he's been terrific down there.
Yeah.
But in an England context, there has always been a sense that he's put himself first. Now, that may not be correct, but that has always been the impression. He gets taken to the South Africa tour last summer, and my feeling was that he was taken there to fail because they wanted to see him fail so they could just write him out of the script. As it happened, England were on the end of a five game losing run. It got to the third test. He was picked to start at fly half. Again, I had the same feeling. They put him in there because they just want to be able to just
lose another one 3-0. Yeah,
and then we don't have to see him again.
But
he barely touched the ball in the first half. It looked as though he wasn't being passed to even. I mean, it looked extraordinary. He then sets up the winning try. They win the game. And, you know, hey, presto, here we are at this situation. And then we have the jersey incident.
Yeah.
Hence the reason it is a big rugby topic, not because it's Danny Cipriani in a jersey nightclub, but because we're coming off the back. He's the incumbent fly half for England. You know, this has given Jones an excuse not to pick him, if he needs an excuse not to. You know, it's a fascinating story. Everyone loves that soap opera of Danny. You know, he's on the front pages this week, isn't he? With, you know, yet, you
What's
know,
he done this
yet
week?
More stories being linked with, you know, whoever it is. And
I've not
doing
read
whatever.
I've not read those.
But that's the...
With Sips, for me, I would never say that I initially liked him. So I walked into... I don't know if I've ever told you, Danny, this, if you ever did, but you're about to find out. Walked onto the training paddock, and he comes up to me, and obviously I think my sort of rugby career is built on hard work. Probably got the most out of what I did. I wasn't the best player ever. But I was a hard competitor.
And,
you know, I just grafted. That was my strength, probably. Yeah. I knew how I would fit into a team and what my role was. I was very quick to understand where I could basically help the team, and if I did that, then you'd get picked. First time I met Danny, he was like, oh, yeah, so Wilco's still there. Obviously, I'm there. Will's gone. So there'd be Nooney or there'd be Toby.
Stuart
or
Abbott.
What time?
Young Rabbit.
Yeah, Stuart didn't have it. Did he go to 2007 or not?
No.
But he was 05, 06.
So he came, but Danny came in 06, didn't he?
Yeah.
No, later than that.
No, it was
08.
08 was his England day. He played one of the warm-ups, didn't he, in 07, but didn't get the World Cup and then started 08. At 10 in 08.
So the first time he came to training, he was like, oh, do you know what best midfield partnership will be? Me, you, and I can't remember who he said. And I just looked at this kid and I was like, who the fuck are you? Yeah. Like, who are you to say, especially where I was like, yeah, whatever. And then he gave me a lift into Twickenham in a Ferrari. And I did hear that.
He rocked up in this.
And I was like, you're everything I don't like about where the modern game is going. And this was like in, oh, whatever. And basically then followed his career. Obviously, no doubt, even when he first rocked up, how good he was.
Yeah.
Obviously, second year syndrome / injury. Absolutely.
Did his arm, his foot came
absolutely
off.
Crippled. Terrible. Absolutely crippled it. Yeah. Never would have wished that on anyone.
Right.
And then obviously the stories went on, obviously, who he dated, so. And I was like, I'm done with this sort of kid. I was still in an era where I was like, I'm not really prepared to open my brain to this. You know, who's the first sort of living the life that you could live if you really wanted to chase it.
And also you're coming to it from a perspective of being in a pretty high profile relationship yourself, aren't you? So, you know.
Yeah,
it was
basically the polar opposite to me.
Yeah.
And then he went to Australia and obviously what went on there. And I was just like, this kid's just not going to get it. And it's such a shame because obviously there was never any doubt how good he was. And then he came back to Sale. Steve Darwin did a great bit of work. And I thought, right, I'm just going to just watch him. And even at Sale, I thought he completely changed his mindset. Whether he just got on with, you talk about my manager, and whether he got on with Steve Diamond, he started doing things that he didn't do before, and it wasn't about just the Danny show. It was, right, how can I make myself look really good, but also make the team look good.
Yeah.
And I think since he's been back at Sale, and then obviously he went back to Wasps and then he's come to us. I mean, he's been amazing for Gloucester.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
And I just think he's changed. And I think jerseys really hurt him for an unknown reason of...
Well, it's the past catching up, isn't it?
But then does he have to live by the sword, die by the sword in what went on in the past and what the decision you made before, even if you were a young man? You know, he had enough opportunities to change that. But I will always still stick by the fact that I would prefer a guy with character. You know, I've had my run-ins, to put it mildly. And if you're performing on the field, you still should be given the fairest crack of the whip. And I think, you know, if we get to a semi-final, quarter-final, semi-final, and things aren't going right, I'd like a guy like him just to come on and change it up.
It wouldn't be an addition with a red top journalist without calling around on Danny Cipriani, would it?
Well, I think it's a fascinating subject because I, you know.
Have you ever seen,
let me just say this to you, have you ever seen a young fly half in modern times come in and make a full debut like he did against Ireland? No. He was magical that day. He was magical. And if someone had said to you that day that in.
Eight caps in the next 10 years.
A decade later, he will have won 10 cap or 11 cap. You would have thought, not a chance.
That's the thing, is there will be no one you'll ever meet who will deny how good he could have been or how good he is. Because I'm not saying he's not. He's done. Mm. I don't think he is done. I think in some ways he's got a balance back. Right now, if I stuck my neck on the block, I think he should go. I think he offers something completely unique and different, which is worth taking. Because, you know, I think if you have Faz, if you have Ford comes on, he's pretty much going to do what Owen does. But sometimes you need something different. And you need someone who's not going to play to the status quo. He's going to literally shake something up. And I think that is Danny's unique ability.
Cipriani's last game for England, Cape Town.
Yeah.
Pouring
on a day, England, five defeats in a row, manages the game, they win the game. He hasn't been in an England squad since. Now, are you suggesting that decent season for Gloucester, very decent season for Gloucester, by the way, you suggesting that he's going to go from that position to suddenly being in the World Cup squad? And if he does, isn't that everything that you disapprove of?
No, I don't think it's everything I disapprove of. In terms of when I say consistency, I say consistency in your starting 15. Am I saying he should go in at starting 10 and you should push fast to 12? No. But if you're going to a World Cup, you need to be able to accommodate every scenario that turns up at you.
Sure.
I mean, it's interesting what you say there. So, I mean, if you are summing up, is it about the beauty of what Cipriani can do on the field against the potential perceived stereotypical risk of it if you're taking him to a World Cup?
Yeah, but as far as Eddie Jones is concerned, there should be no perceptions. You know, he's worked with him. It doesn't matter what has been written in the press, the front or the back of the press. Eddie's had 3-4 years in the job. He's got enough time to get to know these players. Yeah. He should have a handle on the temperament of Cipriani and whether he can deliver for his team. So, you know, whatever happens, this can't be pushed back on the press. This is all about Eddie making a judgment on him as a player now.
Do you get frustrated with Eddie in the fact that the more that you try, how do I word this?
To lead him to selections.
Well, yeah, the more you praise a player, it seems to be the more he will he will basically go, the more you talk about it, the less likely I'm going to pick it because I want to prove that I'm right and you're wrong.
He just has to be in control of the agenda at every point, you know. So he has to.
Is he a journalist's delight?
When you're winning, a journalist's delight. When you actually want some actual genuine answers,
is he a journalist's delight? To start with, yes, because, you know, terrific. But in the same way as Clive Woodward, would go to a press conference knowing what tomorrow's headlines were going to be, because he had control on the agenda.
Yeah,
but he was able to do that. He would never turn up at a press conference and sit around saying, right, lads, what you got? he left nothing to chance. Jones is of a similar ilk to that, but he's just got a stranglehold on the news agenda, and he'll come out with some quote, he'll bring some football team into it, whatever's in the news at the moment, he'll throw
a, but it's a game, a light, it's always been a game.
But ultimately, is he playing the same game with the players? Are they listening to all this and being told constantly this and that, and I always contended for the first 2 years when England weren't as good as their results were suggesting, I didn't think, his force of personality dragged that team from where they were in the 2015 World Cup to what they became by the end of 2016. But then, a bit like Mourinho, does the message get a little bit old? Has he repeated it once too often? Is there enough for the players to get stuck in? I mean, yeah. What do you think?
No, I like that Haskell always say that, oh, he's great, he's just throwing hand grenades out.
You're
there.
You're saying there's a chance kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a hand grenade always thrown out there, and it's all just for Eddie's game. But it's completely the same. Like, it only works when you're winning. And then for a guy who's working in the media, you're like, okay, we've now lost 6 on the bounce. And he would go, 5? Barbarians doesn't count.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, are you really going to say that? I thought you liked to win every game, Eddie.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but it's not a test match. No, it's still a game. You're happy to lose a friendly, or
yeah.
And I think it, you know, even from my point of view, it's like you've got to have a balance between the two, and I'm not really sure I ever liked he does like to control what we're talking about.
Mm.
So he'll just go, oh, by the way, if he's sat there with Hask, he'll go, Hask, by the way, have you been working on your handling, just to try and distract them from actually make any point that's relevant to what people might want to know.
But here's the other point, and I wonder whether this leads to a bigger point. I've always felt since Eddie came over that he sucks the oxygen out of the room to a large degree, in that all the messages come through him.
Yep.
Everything he says goes, Eddie's England, all the rest of it. And we all play to that narrative, so we're all kind of guilty of conspiring to it. But ultimately, when they lose a big game and we say, where are all the leaders? Where are those people not thinking for themselves? Do we actually have to trace this back to this ploy of actually everyone stands back and lets Eddie deliver the message, as opposed to players having the freedom which they would have had back in the noughties and the World Cup winning team, of actually saying what they think? I mean, you don't too often hear England players coming out and really telling it how it is. George Ford is the one who possibly does it more than anyone. He'll come out and just say what he thinks.
I don't generally believe the media's pick up on leaders at the moment. I don't generally believe in that.
You think England do have them or don't have them?
I think they do have them, but I don't think it plays a specific role in terms of the games that they've lost. I listened to... It was again Barnsley, probably, actually.
It's in your head.
See, that's my point about Stuart Barnsley.
Stephen Jones, and the fact that they were talking, there's no way England can go in the World Cup because they're not mentally strong enough. It's a load of bullshit.
Well, that was a Jones line. That came from Eddie Jones.
And they think that Wales are going to go win it. There's fucking no way that Wales are winning the World Cup.
You're prepared to stick your neck? Do you want to say that in the barrel of the camera?
Hey, look, I proved my point right about Ireland.
Yeah.
I'll stick my neck on
quit
line.
While you're ahead.
I'll stick my neck on the line. I don't, unless Wales change the way they play, they will not win the World Cup.
Because they don't score enough tries?
Yes.
Simple as that.
Hello, yeah. That's Mail on Western Mail Online, is it called?
Wales Online.
Turns you off front page. He's front page news tomorrow, yes, that's correct.
I do not care if they do, because they will have, I'm happy to be proved wrong, because I'd love a Northern Hemisphere team to win the World Cup.
Yeah.
But I don't think watching them play through that Six Nations...
Hashtag flip-flop?
No.
I'd love them to win, but they're not going
no,
to...
No, I don't believe they will win.
Okay.
But I don't mind being proved wrong. Is that a flip-flop? I don't think it is a flip-flop. Sort of
it's a better hedge.
Because if they play the rugby that they played in the Six Nations, which literally could bore anyone...
When you're in a hole, keep digging. I think it's Tin's life motto.
Do you not think of South Africa in 95 as a... As a possible,
it was close, but I don't think
tournament win built on defence.
Used to be, so when we won the World Cup, all the previous World Cups were built best defence won.
Yeah,
but I don't think we live in that era anymore.
Yeah,
and I think as much as they've won,
hang on, they've just won the Six Nations Grand Slam.
I know, as much as they've won on the back of that, I don't think they can go to a short format tournament over 6 weeks, seven games, and deliver on that, on just on defence. I just don't believe that.
Okay. However, let me just throw this into you. They've just won a Grand Slam and they've just gone 14 wins in a row.
Yeah.
And they've got a shed load of players to come back in.
I'm quite happy with what they've done.
So they have the consistency of being able to deliver over a number of games.
Well, England won 18. England won 18 on the bounce, but
that was a while ago.
Then they lost seven.
That was a while.
Ireland won 21 out of 23 on the bounce, and then they've just lost two. So.
Okay. You're touring the Celtic nations and popping their balloons.
I'm just saying, I think at the moment rugby is all over the place in terms of who can beat who.
Yeah.
Or who can beat whom. But I still believe you have to have the ability to score tries.
Okay.
And I don't think that will get them through in a World Cup. If they prove me wrong, fair play to them. And, you know, I love everyone. I love everyone in Wales. No one knows Wales like I know Wales. But
great country. Great country. Get a bit of wall.
It's a great county. Oh,
tremendous.
Sorry, it's a good. I just think they will have to play more rugby to win that. To be in, I said this about Ireland when they played New Zealand. I said there's no way you can't give New Zealand 9 line breaks like they did against Argentina the week before and expect to win against New Zealand. They gave them 13 line breaks and still won. So
can't win them all.
Exactly. But eventually
one horse comes in.
Yeah.
Final question, and it's interesting you talk about Eddie Jones, who I don't have to report on, I don't work, but occasionally work with him. I was finding him hugely engaging.
Yeah.
And actually away from the bright lights, really interesting, asks a lot of questions, which I always think is he's interested in you as a person as well as, you know, talking about what he's up to. But and I've just mentioned that in terms of balance. But my question is, come Japan, if England win it, we all know what the headlines will be. Can you see, if England don't win it, is it going to be fairly seismic, or is there, will there be balance?
I don't think it'll be seismic, because I don't think...
It sort of feels like the press pack are...
No. I don't think if you
who's
lined
the best
up,
squad in the Six Nations? Who is the best squad in the Six Nations?
Best squad in Six Nations would probably be England, but it's kind of irrelevant. It's irrelevant.
Right, but so why is it irrelevant?
Why are you coming back on this? We're talking about Eddie Jones in the World Cup.
Let's just go back to your question first.
Has he got the best squad to work with? So if he wins the World Cup, is that seismic? No, it's not.
Well, he's got the most players to work with.
My point is more around, it feels like the press pack are waiting for the fall. And when the fall comes, it feels like, because of the nature of the relationship and the way it's changed over the last 4 years, there will be a devouring of...
I don't think anyone expects England to win the World Cup.
So is it therefore a waiting game? I mean, if it's a semi-final glorious exit, will it be England's glorious failures, or will it be Eddie Jones' failures?
The RFU have said the minimum requirement is a semi-final.
Yep.
You know, if they don't make a semi-final, Eddie's not getting his 2 years extension. So that's already on the record.
Of course.
So regardless of what we think, that's already out there. Now, if England gets to the semi-final and lose to New Zealand, or something like that, it will be, well, better than the previous one, and it won't be a disaster. Do I expect them to win the World Cup ahead of New Zealand? No, I don't. I don't think they have the body of work in recent times.
Get to?
Well, at the moment, it's looking like if they get out of the group, and
if they get out of the group.
They're playing against Argentina and they're playing against France. We're going to talk about the European Cup in a minute.
No, we're not. We're out of time.
We were going to talk about the
European Cup. I think we should do a little bit.
You're going to have one word on each.
On the point of France, is if they can ever replicate what their individuals do in the European Cup, they're going to be a serious team. Argentina, history shows in World Cups, when they have that summer together to prepare,
they
look come good. twice the team.
And they take the guys from Europe.
Yeah. Yep. So, listen, England should get out of the pool, but, you know, you wouldn't perhaps want to put your entire life savings.
If they don't get out of the pool,
can we split
this
into two shows? We're just going to carry on. Yeah.
It's going to produce a size like banging his head against the desk. Paul Zander, the editor, is just already.
Let's go through the weekend.
Right, you can have 10 seconds on each game. You can make a point on each. Given we're talking about players who potentially might make an England World Cup squad, Alex Good, 45 minutes notice. There are the keys to 10. Run our European quarterfinal show for Saracens. Utterly sensational.
Absolutely incredible. At that level, at club level, he's a 9 out of 10 player every week. Eddie Jones doesn't like him, he won't figure.
Yeah.
Very strange for me why he doesn't figure. I think Saris are made for cup rugby. They are just incredible when they get
Not bad at league rugby either.
Not
bad at rugby. Just a word on the man who gets our photo frame.
Yeah,
I think, of honor, Jamie George.
I think / Jamie George Hooker / 10.
/9. Lovely little pick and
For Strattle try. I just think he's at a different level. And as someone said on whatever I was watching, yeah, I think he's put to bed the hooker debate for England.
Well, Farrell's been announced as World Cup captain now, which perhaps echoes that. Well done to Owen once again for his new arrival.
Do you think a quick one on that? Brad Barrett. Big loss for him?
Huge.
Think?
Huge loss. Yeah, I think he binds the glue. Back line. Well, it's a cliche, but I think it's true. I think
Tompkins came on, but he did all right. Yeah. Scored. Yeah, I think they've got depth.
You'd like to talk Toulouse.
Unbelievable.
Possibly
Joie the best vivre. Game of rugby that superlatives, I lose them. It was just amazing to watch. I think I just don't comprehend why you can have two teams that can go at it like that and then you produce a... Because even Toulouse, how many foreigners are in Toulouse? Because Takura didn't play. Who else is foreign in that team?
Don't know. Make the point. Not many.
Well, no, there's not many. So, you know...
Are they back?
Oh, Toulouse are back.
Yeah.
Without any doubt. I mean, their season's been terrific. But and when you look at someone like Antoine Dupont... scrum half.
Dupont was amazing.
What a player.
He's unbelievable. How he never started the Six Nations is just... Well, they've got... Oh, it goes back to issues with the FFR or whatever it is, but I just... What a game. And for me, put a little gamble on Toulouse after about 50...
I said Toulouse before Europe, I said keep an eye on Toulouse.
They were plus 4.5.
I'm not going to bloody lose in the
sense. They were plus 4.5, so I took them on the Friday... on an accumulator, but then on the Saturday I lost my accumulator because I predicted every single game on the Saturday wrong, apart from
following up your match point glory from the Six Nations.
Yes, pretty much.
Several laps behind in the predictions game.
And then I literally took them after 15 minutes going, these guys are playing amazing rugby, they're still a value. Took them immediately, 10 gets red carded. Don't think it's red card. Well,
yeah, fair
no, plan. No. Holmes. Hang on. Rewind. I would like it not to be a red card. I'd like it to be a yellow card, but on the letter of the law, it is a red card. Yep.
Would you like Leinster, Ulster or Munster, Edinburgh?
Would I like...
Which one do you...
Well, I thought they were both intriguing games. Leinster, you know, they know how to win these games. They find a way. Jacob Stockdale's try, hadn't dropped it, could have been different. Love the way Ulster have attacked it. I've waited years for Ulster to come good again because they've always looked as though they should be really good. Edinburgh Munster, I think Tins will touch upon the fact that Edinburgh didn't take the points when they could have done in a game against a team like Munster.
Possession,
gotta do it.
Territory.
Got to do it.
Against a team like Munster that will grind you down, you need to build, the old Clive Woodward, need to build a score.
Yeah.
Two teams that know their way, Munster and Leinster, just to find a way to a semi. And at this stage, that's what matters. There are other podcasts available that I'm sure will go into far greater detail.
Can I just mention Ratez for La Rochelle?
Yes, you may. The European Challenge Cup.
A player that guy is.
# gas.
Hmm. Unbelievable footwork. Unbelievable gas. It was... I was sat there watching the highlights going, oh my God.
Yeah.
This guy's
amazing.
Don't
expect him to feature for France anytime.
Yeah, exactly. He's too talented to play. Yeah.
But what's lovely about the Champions Cup is that... The semi-finals that it's thrown together are fantastic games, aren't they? I mean, Saracens, Munster, Leinster, Toulouse, you say four best teams in Europe, they're all there together. Munster, will they worry about travelling? No, because they'll take the whole of Munster with them, albeit they're playing Saracens. Toulouse, yes, a great team, but Leinster at home, very difficult to beat.
And, sorry, I've got to mention Northampton, Clermont. Ridiculous game.
Yeah, basketball.
Basketball.
But how good is Pernod?
Oh.
How good is Pernod? Ridiculous.
He is.
And then Yatto's tackle, I have to say.
Right.
Yatto's tackle on whatever the Northampton 9 is called. The best tackle I've ever seen.
Reinach.
Probably the best tackle I've seen in years.
Producer Si has just said, if you don't
fuck
get...
you, Si.
Standard. I won't even bother issuing his
hashtag put that on a t-shirt.
Hashtag merch.
Right, perfect pull.
Right, this is perfect pull time, which is 119 and a half seconds of Guinness Perfect Pour, because that's how long it takes to pour a perfect pint.
That we've been going for.
This week's subject is footballers. as a loyal fan at Loftus Road, would you like to lead us off?
So we're running through our team.
Yeah. 1 to 15, footballers any day, any age, go.
Okay, 15, best fullback around, World Cup, free kick alone against Croatia, got to be Kieran Trippier.
Very nice. I like we've done that.
You like that?
Yeah.
If you're looking at the wingers, if you ever visit Liverpool, they talk about the Egyptian king running down the wing. Can only be Mo Salah.
Very strong.
So Salah's on the right wing. Yeah. On the left wing, you want a left winger?
Yeah.
Graham Lasso.
Oh, the glorious.
Reads the Guardian
reader.
Reads the Guardian. Left wing, as you like.
Very nice.
Little tap on the table.
Very good.
If you're moving into the midfield, centres of attention, Ronaldo, Messi.
Very good.
Got to be that.
I hate going last in this game.
Number 10, there's only one number 10, Stan Bowles. The
very
greatest
good.
Number
very
10
good.
Of them all.
Yeah, very nice.
When it comes to scrum half, number 9, we always think of the likes of Matt Dawson, yap, all of that. Who's the person, the gobbiest person in football has ever been, according to Sir Bobby Robson?
There are a few.
Craig Bellamy. He said the gobbiest bloke I ever met.
Very true.
So I have Bellamy
Golf
at 9.
Golf club sellouts as well.
Yeah. Moving into the pack, with your props, you need someone to shove.
Yeah.
Paolo Di Canio.
Wiring.
Hey? I like where you've gone with it.
Sheffield Wednesday, Arsenal.
Yes. Yes. So you've done that. Yeah. Durkin. Was he called Paul Durkin?
Paul Alcock.
Sorry.
Yeah, and you also need size, so I'd have Reza Radek on the other side.
Yeah, good.
Hooker Wayne Rooney.
See what we've done there.
Nice work.
Into the
I like that sort of shit. That's what gets you back on
That's
here.
What gets you a recall.
Second row, you need an aggressive streak. Yeah. Alfredo Morelos. Yeah. Rangers sent off five times this season.
Yeah. This season?
He's just been banned for 5 games, hasn't he?
Yeah. So number 4 shirt for him. Yeah. Number 5 is someone in the line-out, Fraser Forster, 6'6".
Yeah.
Biggest goalie in the Premier League.
Like it.
Back row, Sam Warburton, you'd want at number 6 every day of the week. Yeah. Lions legend. You can't have him, he's a rugby player. Let's go for his mate, Gareth Bale.
See what we've done there.
Yeah, we've done.
Quick, wiry.
And then it gets slightly predictable. Number 7, probably the greatest number 7 of all time, Kenny Dalglish. I'd have him at 7. And number 8.
He's got numbers.
He's got numbers. And to finish with number 8, you'd look at Andre Iniesta probably as being the greatest, but I'm a QPR fan. For me, Gerry Francis was the greatest number 8.
Do you know, that is a really educated 15.
Yeah, that is a good. That's far too much football based.
Yeah, it's very good.
I know that Kenny listens, but Kenny, you're not in my team.
Kenny listens to this?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, of course he
number
does.
7, Kenny. Number
are you joking? Are you being serious?
I'm being serious.
Do you think you'd like to come and have a pint of
Guinness? I can get him on here.
Oh, mate, tee that up. Ask Kelly. Used to work with Kelly on Sky Sports News back where I went. What a brilliant presenter she is, by the way.
Yes, isn't she?
I could learn a thing or two. I'm going next. You're going last this week.
Shit, that's pressure.
Jan Molby at 1. Ballast.
Ballast.
Neville Southall at 2. Ballast. Adiakinfenwa at 3. Yeah. Muscle.
Muscle.
John Terry and Yaps down in my second row. Hard.
Yes.
Fair.
And always wants to be in the picture.
Yeah, very true. Very good at the trophy lift when we win. Sir John. Back row, I'm quite pleased with. Vinnie Jones at 6.
Oh, Vinnie.
Did you not put him in there?
Shit. Oh, see, I think there's a
Roy Keane at 7. Variety. Massive Munster fan. Yeah. He was there in 2004. Oh, good show, the Munster Watson. Yeah. And I've gone Razor Ruddock at 8, like a sort of big bowling ball carrying.
Oh, I've got some variety in these teams. I like it.
Butch Wilkins at 9. Oh. Like a sort of Sid going. Back in the days when there's a bit of party at the back. Not a lot on top.
My dad told me about him, yep.
Ready?
Yep.
There's only one tenner, and that's Pele. No? Okay.
That's amazing. I haven't even
What are you doing? Ryan Giggs on the left wing. Yep. Yeah. I've gone Ronaldo and Zlatan at centre. Size, pace, power. Love the confidence that Zlatan brings in 13.
Yeah.
A lot of chopsy as well. Messi, my little flea on the right. And I've got Beckham as my goal-kicking 15.
Strong.
Quite pleased with that?
That's strong.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah. Right.
Michael.
I have shared with you Jan Molby,
good
player, weight to scrum. Got Maradona as my hooker, short, stocky, used to handling the ball. not scared of white lines either.
Very good. Shuffle.
Yeah, I've got... I did a bit of research on this. There's called a guy called Will Fatty Falk. Back in 1902, I think it was. Oh, it was 24 stone.
Goalie. He's, must have been a goalie.
It was a goalie.
Where did you find that?
When the ball was in and there?
And he chased after a referee in his birthday suit, so he had to be in my team.
Very good. One of your tourists.
So he was in as my tight head. Never going backwards, that one. I've got Neville Southall. Great hands for a line-out.
Good.
In my second
position?
Row. Second row.
Yeah, all right, fair. Yeah.
I've written after. Tough lift, though. Quite
yes,
heavy.
Yeah.
Quite rotund. I've got Tony Adams, my enforcer, in my second
yeah,
row.
Yeah, very good.
Workhorse, you know. I've got Akin Fenwar as my six. Yeah. 16 stone, pure ripped. Muscle, highest. He is in the top 10 in FIFA, the football game.
Yeah.
19, he was rated the highest in terms of strength and power, so I had to have him in my
team. What's his Christian name?
He's Adebayo.
Adebayo, yeah.
I've got David Batty as my seven.
Oh, nice. I like
legally,
that.
Yeah, horrible, angry man. Absolute nuisance. I've got Zlatan as my eight, powerful.
Way too beautiful
base.
To be an eight.
Confident. He's basically Lawrence, isn't he?
I've never seen an eight with a ponytail
is LOL.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's good. He's good. He's good at the close up and the anthem.
Yeah, exactly. He's good at the anthem.
Would he put his head down there?
I think so. No. He's one of those old school number eights that sort of pushes them into the sky and against the stands on the blind side.
Slingshots.
Yeah, I love that.
I got Messi at nine, pulling all the strings. Yeah. Just a playmaking masterclass. Keep people guys. Gazza at 10.
Yeah. Oh. Did you see the picture of him? Did you
see that playing picture? For Tottenham last night.
Brilliant. But there was there's an amazing on social media of him. As he went on, they've cut the photo together with him in tears at Italia 90. No. And it's him greeting him. It's really cool. Have a little peek.
I've got Cristiano Ronaldo on my left wing.
Yeah.
Pace, footwork, natural born finisher. Got John Barnes, my playmaking 12.
Anfield rap.
Yeah.
If it comes to
in the bar, he can do it. I've got Lukaku as my 13.
Yeah,
just
good.
Powerful.
Yeah, that is strong. I like that.
He's a great
offload
decoy
as well. Good offload, I imagine.
Bale on my right wing.
Yeah.
And then I've got Jack Butland at 15 because he used to play rugby when he came through until he was 16.
Is that right?
And obviously, safe pair of hands. You won't drop any. Yeah.
I remember meeting at Twickenham a few years ago. Michael Carrick, very big rugby fan. Yeah. Ryan Giggs, obviously his dad was a rugby league player, wasn't he? But huge Wales fan, and said the one thing he wanted to do on his bucket list was the Lions tour. I don't think he went in 2017. And Rio was there as well. I don't know, there's boxer in, but there's sort of hobnobbing. It's quite interesting. I like a bit of cross-sport pollination. Whose team wins?
I don't know. They were pretty good.
They're all good.
I think I'll take this one.
Richard.
Come through, Richard. You can judge again.
You can judge it.
Thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. Greatly.
It's a sort of curious tour through a whimsical maze of rugby badinage.
We didn't use him about what went on in Paris last week and re-talking about what you and Ben Ryan talked about.
I completely lost. What are you talking about?
The conference in France.
Oh, yes.
Week about the law changes.
With Alec. Where's rugby going to be in a year? You've got 20 seconds. 2 years.
Let me throw back.
Are we in
you.
A good place?
No, I think we're confused.
I think
the sport
far.
Is completely confused as to where it wants to be, where it feels it needs to be. Safety aspects, I don't think it really knows if it's what to do for the best, to be honest.
For journalism, is that good or is that
no,
a tough assignment?
I don't think it's good because I think people switch off. I don't think people engage in. People want to know what's happening. They don't want to know about him saying this and him saying, listen, let's look at Brexit, let's look at politics. Let's not mention it again, but that's a case in point. People don't want to talk about all that. They want to know what's happening. And there's no clarity, as I can see it, in rugby beyond.
You've got 1.5 seconds because producer size literally in his cab waiting to go.
My issue is we changed the game to make it faster, better to watch, better spectacle sport, and now we're saying there's too many rooks, there's too many collisions, there's too many this. You can't have it both ways. I prefer the game, even though some of the bits I don't agree with because it's what I was brought up, it's a better game to watch.
Okay.
So you can't then bring in 50-20s, you can't bring in all that bullshit. The game is what it is. Don't affect the DNA of a sport. You just have to accept that it's a multi-directional collision-based sport that will have injuries. You can't fix everything.
You can change the replacements, though. You can change that.
Fewer of them. Yes.
Yeah, you can't have them all coming on after 10 minutes.
Release the characters. That
would
be.
I would prefer...
Go on.
More replacements, but less subs.
So you
can do more tactical changes.
Yep.
So if you're way behind, you can bring out a loose cannon, but maybe less subs.
We are way behind. Oh, actually, we're way over. We're sort of way away.
But I think that's one of the greatest shows.
It's been really interesting. Thank you very much indeed for coming.
Thank you.
Come back again soon.
Yeah, I'd love to.
It's great not to have Haskell who just goes, blah!
he'll listen to this and we'll get into the WhatsApp group, but sadly we don't have to pass that on. Maybe we will. That is it for this week. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening to the House of Rugby. Do leave us a comment, a feedback, as always. We're a YouTube show and a podcast. Don't forget to download and watch our boxing show TKO with Carl Frampton and Boys Don't Cry with Russell Kane. Thank you to Tins. Thank you to Alex. Have a very good rest of the season.
Thank you very much.
Up the chutzpah. We'll see you next week, but from all of us, bye for now.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.